Hey, welcome to our podcast. This is Bad Playstyle. Bad Playstyle is a book club podcast where we all sit down and play the same game. And hopefully you have played the same game at home so that you can be intellectually engaged with our conversation.
Not psychically savaged by the infinite spoiler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to spoil every game that we set out to play. And any games that come up, I don't know, we'll probably fucking spoil them too, so check the show notes before you listen to an episode if you don't want to get blindsided by us mentioning off the cuff that, I don't know, Paul Ryan is Atlas. It's still the same idea. They're like, the Broncos lost the war. Like,
yeah.
It's like the direct fucking analogy. They're hillbillies in space, Keenan.
Yeah, I know, but like we're over here being like not the wrong side, right? Like
Okay, and we're back.
Again.
So, Bad Playstyle, episode 9.
Infinite spoilers.
We are all drinking.
We got that one out of the bag.
We are drinking beers, mm-hmm. which is not something we normally do, and the reason why we are drinking beers is because this is the third day in a row we're trying to record this podcast
in the summer
in Owen's super hot room.
Yeah, super hot.
Yeah. I don't know why we said it twice.
That's okay.
Weird.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that weird voice.
Yeah, you did that weird voice.
It just came out of me.
It's fucking strange, weird. Yeah. It's like marketing works or something. But yeah. Anyway,
it's the most innovative shooter I've played in years.
And it just says its name at you a lot.
Oh boy.
That's a storyline.
All right, boy. What game do we play?
We played California.
We played Californium.
Yeah, we did. I co-signed the thing that you two said.
I feel like we're repeating.
We are repeating, because we've done this three times. But the thing about that is, we're going to make... So, as well as Infinite Spoilers...
Wait, we haven't introduced ourselves.
We are... episode of your favorite science fiction series
that we've been living for 3 days.
Yeah. So, okay.
I believe the episode you're referring to is called Cause and Effect.
My name is Matt.
My name is Keenan.
And I'm Owen.
Yeah.
You didn't say my name is.
And we are bad.
It's true.
Style.
You're absolutely right.
Shame Keenan. This is a new segment.
Shame.
As of last recording of this episode.
This is a So, Owen, why are we shaming Keenan?
So, Keenan has much in the way that, like, a vampire has, like, a thirst for human blood.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Keenan has a thirst for games, I would say, in general, a thirst for $60 games on release.
Yeah.
But Keenan has a thirst for games that he doesn't have time to play.
Yep. I own that.
So, I guess I'll tell the tableau. Of what I saw happen,
okay,
is I'm sitting at home, and I'm at my computer, and I'm playing whatever, or maybe I'm not. I might just be browsing the friends playing a game.
Notification right now.
Yeah.
For caption.
Oh yeah, is Keenan playing Dead Cells right now?
No.
And Keenan has too many games that he doesn't need to be playing. And I say this as someone who's only ever booted up, like, a third of their own Steam library. And I think Keenan has
a
problem.
And it's not like I'm doing it the smart way of buying Humble Bundles all the time.
No. No, this is the Vampire $60 thirst that we're talking about.
The one we brought up last two times was Ghost Recon Ghostlands.
Yeah, Cocaine Lands, Blood Mountain.
Yeah.
Whoa, I want to play that game.
Yeah. Yeah, so motherfucker's playing another game he bought. He's always griping about how he's broke.
And Owen described this the first time we recorded it as a moment where he leaned back and actually swore out loud in
his
room.
Yeah, I swore out loud on my computer, like, Keenan, what the fuck?
Yeah. Which, like, now I just wonder what else I do that causes that.
So the new segment is called Shame Keenan, and this week we're doing that by bringing up the fact that he bought Ghost Recon Wildlands, and I think played it for a weekend.
Probably about 10 hours.
Yeah. So that's an investment.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving right along, what games did we play this week? Oh, Matt, that's an excellent question. I played a bunch of Brigador this week because I bought the new DLC that contains just the 3 hours of music and a bunch of audiobooks.
We're so canned at
Thanks,
this point.
Max. It's so great that you played that. Brigador is a really good game. It's weird that you would say that. It is weird that I would say that.
Oh, my God, stop.
Kenan, what did you play this week?
We already broke that bubble. I played a lot of Dead Cells, which is a really cool Castlevania.
Yeah, but what about Fish, though?
I want to talk about Fish.
I want to talk about Fish.
Okay, but we're going to get to Fish. I got to talk about how Dead Cells is a Castlevania meets Dark Souls. Mechanics, and that it's really good, and I like it.
Okay. And then everything is Dark Souls forever because of the panoply of philosophical ideas that Dark Souls brought to the table,
yep.
which developers can pick and choose to put into their game or not, yeah. or put slight remixes on the whole thing as a formula.
Matt, do you just want to do this one on your own?
I feel like we're going to hit, like, a record time on this podcast. Like, this is going to be one of our short
You can never step in the same river twice, bro.
Matt asked why Dark Souls was important.
I feel like I've been in this river 3 times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the same spot.
In the same river. In the same water.
In the same nut
same
sweat.
Same sweaty, yeah. So Matt asked why Dark Souls is a big deal, and one of my arguments was that Dark Souls is finally the good 3D adventure game platform that matters. And Owen pointed out that a lot of the things in Dark Souls are new, and that we use them
Dark
everywhere.
Souls is a huge package of ideas. And, like, some developers, like, take the whole package and say, I want to make Space Dark Souls. And some developers say,
I want to make Samurai Dark Souls.
I want to make Samurai Dark Souls, or I just like the attack animations from Dark Souls, or I just like the fact that you die a shitload in Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Or I just like how fucking hard Dark Souls is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, it's been a bunch of shit.
And like,
Good shit.
I think an analogous thing is, like, roguelikes used to be games that emulated the game Rogue in a pretty big way.
Right. And now they're procedurals.
Now there's roguelikes and roguelike likes
and
like
roguelites.
Yeah, and roguelikes and soft rogues and whatever, you know, like
we should make a hard rogue.
That's just rogue.
Yeah, well that's if you harshly follow the Berlin interpretation of a roguelike.
Well,
oh, right, that's a real thing.
Well, yeah, done. That's a real thing. A bunch of nerds got together and decided things about how roguelikes should be.
I'm okay that there was a Berlin Accord on roguelikes.
Somebody talk about Fish already.
Yeah, so I've been playing a game called... I've been playing a game called Magikarp Jump. It's a quality...
Me too!
Have you actually played
yes!
it yet? Oh!
This is new part of the river, folks.
Yeah.
Matt wasn't playing this yesterday.
He bent in the river. Last 2 times we tried to record this podcast, Matt hadn't played it yet.
Matt hadn't played Magikarp Jump,
so,
brought to you by the Pokemon Company.
So Magikarp Jump is a delightful Pokemon game that subverts, like, all of the premise of Pokemon games. Like, Pokemon games are about how you are going to work very hard and become the very best Pokemon trainer in the whole world.
Go on an epic journey
across the land.
And you're going to be friends with this Pokemon for a long time.
Yeah, and you're going to love them, and they're going to love you, and you're going to meet exotic
and
wild creatures.
And nothing bad will ever happen to them.
Yeah, and nothing bad will ever happen. They'll never die, even though they fight and, like, fight other Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And so in Magikarp Jump, you stay in one place, you live in a Koi, like, next to a Koi pond.
You live in one town?
Yeah.
You do one thing in that town.
And all you can do is catch Magikarp, which are the shittiest Pokemon that can't do anything. And the game even highlights this with a YouTube video you can access through the game.
It's so good.
Yeah, Keenan and I watched this yesterday before you got here, Matt, where it sings about how Magikarp's, like, fucking useless and shit.
It's so good. It's like a Soviet anthem for how Magikarp's
useless.
Yeah, it kind
of is. Like, we should watch it after this.
It's got,
like,
a good feel.
You know, like, people said long ago, Magikarp used to be really powerful, but I don't believe that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like, that's probably some shit.
And they literally call him, like, useless repeatedly in the song.
Yeah, like, it's part of the chorus to call him useless.
So you catch Magikarp, which are Pokemon that are enormous fish that do nothing.
And don't need to breathe water.
Well,
so I mentioned this yesterday. They're not fish. They're Pokemon.
That's carp. I bet if you look
at... it's a carp.
I bet if you look at its Pokedex entry, it'll say, Magikarp, the fish Pokemon. You know,
that's fish Pokemon, right?
Yeah, like, still a Pokemon.
Whatever, Trubbish is a trash Pokemon, doesn't mean he's not trash.
Still a Pokemon that refuses to obey the regular laws of physics.
Anyway, so So you don't go on an epic journey. You just live in your town. Your Magikarp competes in a jumping contest with other Magikarp trainers.
And can apparently die.
It can, yeah. Thank you. Cool. Yeah. And then there's random events where sometimes your Magikarp can just get straight up murdered and you don't get it anymore. You lose it.
Yeah, it's gone forever.
There's an event where you can meet a Pokemon that suicide bombs your Magikarp, so to speak. You can find what looks like fucking a Pokeball, and you try and open the Pokeball if you want, because there might be goodies inside. Sometimes it's a Voltorb, and it blows up, killing itself and your Pokemon.
But you're mysteriously just out of blast range.
Well, I mean, whatever.
Even though you're right next.
Pokemon never been able to kill humans in any...
It's weak.
Whatever. Yeah, it's a really stupid game. It's really funny. The writing in it...
It's super self-aware that it's a phone game and that it's doing dumb things.
And that it's about the shittiest Pokemon.
Yeah, it's really... It's good that way.
I have an item in the game that I haven't had a chance to use yet. So part of Magikarp's shtick is that he's the shittiest Pokemon in the world. And if you get him to, like, level 50 or something, he evolves into an enormous powerful dragon. And in the game, I have received an item that allows me to prevent my Magikarp from evolving. And the fact that I have this item makes it sound like that's a useful thing to do. Except in a normal Pokemon game, you want your Magikarp to be a Gyarados. Mm-hmm. Gyarados is an enormous flying, like, dragon.
Yo, but a Gyarados can't jump.
Yeah, exactly. You can't compete in the jumping competition.
That's not the point. Yeah.
Anyway, I like that game.
Yeah, and the way the game deals with the fact that you have to get a new fish to do things is that you're so good at training Magikarp, you're actually inspiring all the other fish in the pond.
Yeah, to be better. It's very earnest and wholesome.
Yeah.
And when your Magikarp gets so big he can't grow anymore, and he retires into your pond, the Magikarp...
You get a little ride-off into the sunset moment.
Yeah, you get a little ride-off, and then sometimes you'll see them in your pond. And you're like, oh, look, there's Laura Palmer.
Oh, look, there's Goldust.
She almost beat the Rocky Road or whatever.
There's Gold. I had to. Don't give me that. Yeah. So, we've been playing that. We got back into Payday 2.
Yeah.
As a group. Because VR is coming and we want to know what the hell we were doing with it.
Yeah. I also just enjoy playing Payday 2.
Payday 2 is good.
Am I the only one still playing Payday 2 just because I like it?
I like it. I like it. I like that I can use other guns again. That's great.
It's funny. It's fun shooting cops with, like, really overwrought dialogue and mm-hmm. overacted nonsense.
Yeah. The AO is a shitstorm.
Yeah.
Matt, did you burn out? Mm-hmm. No. What's next on the Doom agenda?
Oh, we done?
We talked about games
we
played.
We talked about the games we played.
No, I played Factorio. But
yeah,
like,
you played it a bunch.
I've already put 200 hours in that game. I'm just playing it because I was sick last weekend, and I wanted, like...
I played XCOM, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, funny thing about that XCOM 2.
We're talking about this?
Are we?
Yeah.
So, Matt, Keenan, and I all pre-ordered XCOM 2, which is a bit of an outlier for us.
Don't pre-order games.
Yeah, don't pre-order games.
Don't do it.
Generally, we don't pre-order games. We all pre-ordered it, and I'm the only one who played XCOM 2 when it came out. For some reason.
Yep. To be fair, I played it a couple hours.
Hold on, let me sit down my beer and... You can't see it, but I'm awkwardly clapping.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
Yeah. These knuckleheads, a month before XCOM 2 came out, all... reinstalled XCOM 1 and installed the marathon difficulty and speed super hard buttfuck mod.
We got on that Long War and it's awesome.
Yeah,
I put 300 hours in the Long War.
Yeah, right, like a month before the sequel came out. Yeah. So when the sequel came out, none of them could touch it.
Yep, we didn't want to. We were XCOM fatigued. Yeah. Matt's not XCOM fatigued, so we're playing XCOM 2 now.
So, okay, a couple of things I want to add here. I didn't immediately stop playing all XCOMs when XCOM 2 came out. I just didn't want to play XCOM 2. I kept playing Long War for multiple months. Like I said, I put 300 hours into Long War.
The Long War was long. Go figure.
Yeah. I would like to get on the witness bench and testify against myself for a minute.
I'm just saying. I was having fun. I don't see what's wrong with that. And I'm playing XCOM 2 now.
Yeah.
Then we played Californian, which is about... Abraham Lincoln, and the color orange, and the color blue, and the color white, and the color red.
Okay. Californium is, and I hate the derogatory term, walking simulator.
Fascism.
Kinda.
Terrible publishers.
Uh-huh.
Getting emotionally involved in writing.
Uh-huh. So, the game starts with you facing a typewriter with a writing prompt, and you're typing out, like, a schlocky science fiction novel on a typewriter.
You're typing the... individual letters.
Actually, yeah, typing.
It. You actually have to type the words. It's kind of like playing a typing game, like you might in school.
And it makes you type a while, like you get into it.
And it makes you, and because this is the only thing you have to do, you have to actually focus on the words that are in front of you, so that when the doorbell rings or someone knocks in the first one, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like,
yeah, because a note comes under the door.
Yeah, and it's like actually kind of irritating. It's like, motherfucker, like
I'm working here.
I'm typing my great American novel about, I can't remember what the first book's about. Honestly, I can't remember what I was actually typing is about.
But the important part is that it makes you emotionally engage with the text.
Yeah. And very irritated at the non-person who knocked on my door.
Yeah, because everybody in the game is a non-person.
And then you get up. You get up from your typewriter and you answer the note at the door, which is something about... I think the first note was about how you're late on your book.
No, it's I'm leaving
you. Is it I'm leaving you?
Yeah.
And... Your wife is like, I'm leaving you, and I'm leaving forever, because you don't do anything, and you're terrible.
And you're a nutto.
And you're weird, and I'm tired of that. And so, you wander around your apartment for a while, and eventually you run across a TV. And then you look at the TV, and the TV throws up a theta, and this disembodied voice of some sort of narrator comes in and starts talking to you about... how it's talking to you. It's all very meta in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
It's like offering you something.
Yeah, and you're not really clear what that is, because you were literally, like, typing 2 seconds ago.
It's funny because, like, I'm not just referencing this because this is another walking simulator that heavily features a narrator, but it definitely sounds like the narrator from the Stanley Parable if he had, like, something slightly more important to do than what he does in the Stanley
Parable. It kind of felt like it was the same narrator.
I like that point from yesterday. I don't think it was the same actor. This one seemed meaner
than
the Stanley Parable guy.
He sort of engenders the same tones at times, though.
The Stanley Parable guy seemed, like, accidentally condescending because he's too stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, you look at this TV, and then the TV throws a Roman numeral at you. And that Roman numeral signifies how many thetas you have to find in the local environment within the level. And the thetas, what happens is you'll find one... And maybe you have to look at it from the right spot in the room, or you have to move around in just the right way so that it shows up.
They're, like, magically active.
Yeah.
They live in impossible spaces.
There's a lot of puzzle elements. Like, one of the early ones is there's a bookshelf in your room, and if you look at a section of books, it disappears. And then you figure out that if you get all of the sections of books to disappear, a theta shows up. And whenever a theta shows up, and you click and hold on it until the circle on your clicky bit in the middle of your screen fills... It makes this whaaaaaa sound. That wasn't quite right. It was better the other day.
Yeah.
And a bubble...
It sounds a little bit like Zerg Creep expanding or
kind
something.
Kind of, yeah. And then a bubble to another reality opens up in that space.
It's like a balloon filling up with farts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Because it's got this sort of like uneven quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then also this expanding quality to it.
So this first space you're in is Berkeley in the late 60s, and
it's very orange.
It's very, very orange.
And everybody is a cardboard cutout person who's like...
It's very cartoony.
Yeah, they're very cartoony, but then also literally they are a cardboard cutout.
Right, and they have like a Scanner Darkly cartooniness to them.
Yeah, like they're like literally on purpose. They're literally a 2D shape with a person written on, like drawn on them.
And then they talk at you. About things.
But what they say is very much based on the, like, cartoon character they are, like, whatever archetype.
They're not only physically 2D, but they're very two-dimensional characters. Stavros, the guy at the diner, is a Greek dude who likes that you come into his diner.
You have your dirtbag publisher.
Your dirtbag publisher is always mad that you're, like,
he's late. Not really a dirtbag, he's just skeevy and...
He's a publisher. Like, in the most cartoon sense of the job. Like,
And then there's, like, the groovy 60s chick that's, like, alluding to the fact that she saw Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. And then
like, propositions you.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and jerk fascist cops.
Yeah.
Who think that you're a druggie and want to kill you.
And, like, a communist probably. Like, don't they call you a communist?
Yeah.
I feel like they called you a communist.
Yeah, I mean, because you're a sci-fi writer in the 60s who does drugs. Yeah.
Yeah, you're a communist.
So, part of why we keep mentioning that is that the game is loosely based on Philip K. Dick.
Well, at least we think it is, and I think I'm, at least I say almost certain.
Yeah, like, there's enough there that it makes sense.
The game never comes out and says it, but, like,
yeah, but Alvin Green is a Philip K. Dick stand-in.
Like all the cardboard people, I think, like, Philip K. Dick in a lot of his books, brings up an idea or a theme of people, like, not being what they seem, or like, being facades or mechanisms masquerading as people.
There's a lot of people who aren't real, or him asking, what is a real person?
Yeah, yeah, and so like, all these, like, little cardboard cutout people, like, kind of feed into that. And then it's all the whole, like, 60s sci-fi thing.
Yeah,
and...
yeah.
So anyway, when you collect enough datas, and you find enough TVs, and you collect enough, and you find enough holes of reality, it opens up the big hole, and you progress on to the next world. And there's four worlds. There's
Orange Berkeley.
There's Orange Berkeley. There's Blue Berkeley, which there's like Tesla Motors, and you're way cool.
The gas station's a Tesla pump.
Yeah, the gas station's a Tesla pump.
You're the Patriot writer.
You're the Patriot writer. The authoritarian Californian state.
Which is somehow based on Lincoln. You said they like lionized him? Or
lionized him. Yeah, they like...
You wrote three books about him, and they're on the wall, and everyone's into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're the Patriot writer.
Well, you can find like mechanical facsimiles of him and things like that. And like, they are super into Lincoln.
So the interesting thing that happens as we jump worlds is that everything...
Well, then, I want to say, the next world after that is Mars Rome. You're the emperor of Mars Rome, and Mars Rome is populated by three classes of people. Real people who exist at the, like, imperial level, the space cops who are synthetic people. They're synthetic people that you created, and then there's the human miners.
Can I clarify the word Mars Rome? Because that's actually two words.
Yeah.
When you kept saying Mars Rome, it sounds like Mars Rome.
Yeah, it's two
Mars,
words.
This is a Roman society that is built on Mars.
Yes.
And it's futuristic as shit.
So, yeah, and then after that is a jambalaya of all three that is busted apart and exploding the entire time.
It's like kind of like sort of a dream sequence. Mm-hmm. Not dream sequence, but like, yeah, it's like a mishmash.
There's no
of
people
shit
in that one.
So the
yeah, that's a good point.
There's no talking people in that one.
Right.
There's people, but they don't talk to you.
They don't interact with you at all.
Don't they just they regurgitate phrases they've already said, don't they?
There's nothing new. There's no new interaction.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about when you world hop is that everything that is like of significance to the main character,
like in the real world.
In the real world, is more exaggerated with each step.
Or the first world, I guess.
Yeah, so in the first world, your wife left you because you're a fucking weirdo and she's tired of your shit, and your publisher...
And something about your daughter.
Yeah, who is gone and or dead.
Yeah,
but
we're not sure in the first world.
Your publisher's mad at you because you're late on your book. The cops don't like you because you're a commie drug user.
Yeah.
In the next world... The cops like you, but are still keeping an eye on you because you're the Patriot writer, and that's dangerous.
Everyone's a thought criminal.
Right.
Well.
Everyone's a thought criminal. Your publisher's totally cool with you because as the Patriot writer, you're bringing him hella sales.
But everyone would love you way more if you wrote a new book.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you're still behind.
Yeah.
And then your wife in the weird authoritarian state is a thought criminal that you turned in. Mm. That's why she's gone.
Yeah.
And there's still, like, missing daughter... problems there. The way I think I had interpreted the daughter was that the daughter had died, and that was sort of the last straw to your wife dealing with
sure.
Yeah, I feel like that's what I remember, but also, like, for once, we all played the game immediately.
Yeah.
And then waited 2 weeks to record.
Yeah.
And then failed at recording twice because of mechanisms.
Yeah. So, circular games, circular recording.
Yeah.
And then in the third world, your position elevates even farther. You are Space Roman Emperor on Mars. You're in charge of the, as previously stated, synthetic cops who keep the miner population down. They also want to kill all of humanity, including you.
And your wife's, like, fomenting the miner revolution.
Yeah, your wife is, like, totally starting some shit and ready to come kill you in the miner revolution.
Hey, workers' revolution on Mars, I'm into it.
And your daughter's already dead. And is also
the valet
in your head, and dies again at the end of that sequence.
Once she realizes what she is.
Mm-hmm.
And also, your publisher is like your right hand man.
He's your co-consul. Because remember, this is
right, Space Room. So yeah, really weird, really cool settings. I talked about how I'll do it again. How the emotional exaggeration and the lack of escape from his emotional problems in each world, like, resonated in a way, because I've had experiences where I'll write something and I'm trying to not talk about or deal with a thing in life, and it comes up anyway. Like, you don't get to make those choices sometimes with your subconscious, because it's a jerk. And I liked that was built into the storytelling. And then I was very frustrated with this game while playing it, because
you hit, like, a big You had a big thing, didn't
I
you?
I had to go find a walkthrough because I couldn't find one of the Thetas. Because one of the rules that eventually gets broken with the Thetas is that they glow white. Like, super harsh, saturated white.
Well, that was one of the things I liked, was that they established rules for how to find the Thetas and then break them.
Right. And I wasn't prepared for that one to be broken, even though, like, I think all the rules get broken at some point.
All the rules get broken at least once.
So, I'm literally running around the third level, which I know is close to the end. Like, I can feel the game sort of wrapping in on itself.
Yeah.
And I literally have one left on the whole level, and I can't fucking find it, and I'm really mad, and I end up going and watching, like, a YouTube video to find it, and I felt really dumb afterwards, because, like, oh, there it is. But also, like, it's the only one that didn't glow, and I was leaning on that portion too hard. So I got pretty mad in the moment and frustrated, but I'm, like, over it now. So, yeah, cool game. Yeah, fourth level we didn't really talk about.
The Q entity that introduces you to this whole thing is begging you not to, like...
Reach the end,
because it'll somehow kill him or, like, make him move on or unravel something. Anyway.
I think he's, like, kind of deliberately supposed to be an outsider. Like an outsider looking... Like, if we accept the premise that you are, like, a stand-in for Philip K. Dick, like, Philip K. Dick's works are great because, like, Philip K. Dick was schizophrenic and, like, put a lot of, like, his delusion and whatever into his writing. And so, like, I think that the narrator, even if he isn't literally just supposed to be someone on the outside reading Alvin Green's books,
right,
is, like, still, like, from that perspective. Like the narrator's, like, almost, like, the rest of the human race that ever read Philip K. Dick's books,
right,
like, looking in at Philip K. Dick's, right, like, brain kind of unraveling
and putting itself back together.
Yeah, that's literally what I was about to say, is, like kind of trying to stitch itself together and make sense of, like, the trauma he experienced, you know.
And all these different realities it's created.
Yeah, you won't be able to process these fantastic worlds anymore.
Right, is the thing is asking you not to do it because it loves what you've done.
Yeah.
And you as the player character kind of need it to be done, which is a really cool juxtaposition. It's really interesting, like, forced storytelling in a game on rails. Okay, so what's next on the agenda?
This is the part of the episode that we call the denouement. And the first thing in the denouement is I give you exactly 3 minutes to say something stupid about wrestling.
Talk about stupid wrestling things. So, this week they did a pay-per-view event, or a network event, whatever. It's a Sunday wrestling show for WWE. And they did this big event called Extreme Rules that they do once a year, which is supposed to be them, like, letting the pressure off on hitting each other with stuff. Right? Because, like, they went PG at one point. Oh, we're not going to hit each other with chairs anymore. That's not cool. And then they're like, okay, we need to let that valve loose on that kind of entertainment and wrestling. So we're just going to have a show that's a ton of people hitting each other with chairs, put each other through tables and cage matches and all the shit you don't normally have.
Tails and chables.
Yeah, exactly. So
Tori and Trevor.
Yeah.
So one of the matches this year at Extreme Rules, in, like, wrestling logic, is that
they hit each other with snowboards because the word is extreme.
No, that'd be awesome.
BMX bikes?
That would be hard.
Inline skates.
Skateboards.
Mm. No.
Wait, there's never been a skateboard in Extreme Rules?
Not that I've seen.
I don't watch wrestling and I'm already skeptical of what you're saying.
So, pardon me. So, a wrestler hitting someone with a skateboard seems like something hard to do where you make it look like it hurts but doesn't actually hurt.
You hit them with the grip tape. Not with the trucks. But
then you accidentally tear their skin off because it's sandpaper. Anyway.
Wrestlers have lots of skin, it's fine.
Yeah.
You got way more skin than the average person.
Isn't there just a word for when you bleed on purpose in a wrestling ring?
Yes, there's a couple of them. So anyways...
It's a bloody potato.
The thing that's dumb...
You shove a bloody potato in his kayfabe.
The thing that's dumb...
It's a soggy receipt.
You wrap it in a receipt, yeah, and you shove it back up his k-hole.
So the thing that's frustrating and dumb about Extreme Rules this year is that in one of the matches, one of the stipulations is that a guy will lose his title if he gets disqualified. So you have an event where everything is supposed to be not a normal match, and you're forcing this one guy to have a normal match. I haven't watched it yet. I don't know if that means he just gets the shit beaten out of him with a bunch of stuff and can't... can't hit back.
Do you think you could get like a refund if you bought that pay-per-view and it was like, I bought this on the assumption that people would hit each other with folding chairs?
That match wasn't extreme. I want my money back.
There were zero folding chairs in it, and that is the advertised purpose of an Extreme Rules match. And again, no folding chairs. They just fought each other. And then one guy got really sad, or didn't. I don't know. I don't know how this turned out.
So yeah, it was dumb, because in the internal logic of wrestling, this is the show where we get extreme, and then that guy wasn't allowed to be. Which is dumb.
That's a bummer. That's really stupid. That if you create an elaborate, stupid rule set, and then don't even follow your own stupid, elaborate rule set.
Exactly. It's like, why the fuck are we even doing this? Like,
Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Oh, yeah.
Engage.
It should be mentioned that Matt and I both own VR headsets. We should probably have the guy who doesn't have his keys clipped to his belt.
Just bring me the mouse.
How about I just...
Yeah, just bring Matt the mouse. Just
bring me the mouse.
Jam that in my pocket.
So Matt and I both own VR headsets, and I'm eyeballing this game, Star Trek Bridge Crew. It looks super cool.
I'm excited for you guys to buy it so I can try it.
There's a thing that they're doing that I will hope cure a problem that exists within multiplayer VR games, where with a few exceptions, when a good multiplayer VR game comes out, everyone flocks to it and buys it and plays it for whatever amount of time. But because the install base is just small enough that when the next multiplayer game comes out, there's not enough players left in the last game for that game to be at all viable.
Right. You talk about games dying all the time with player bases. Well, the player base here is much smaller.
Yeah, so. And like I think it's growing very fast. It's actually like I looked at sales numbers for headsets.
Yeah.
And it's doing well.
Good. Good.
But that doesn't mean I can play Hover Junkers anymore.
Right.
Because
no one plays
the multiplayer. Like, player base of VR has moved on from Hover Junkers, and that's just like an albatross.
I mean, you can't fuck with HandyBot.
Yeah. Man, fuck, don't bring that guy, fuck that guy. That guy's an asshole.
Wow.
That's some harsh feelings
about
HandyBot.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you about it later. Okay. I don't want to give him any more airtime. Anyway, I can't play Hover Junkers anymore, because no one plays it.
Right. And Hover Junkers is a good game, and that's a bummer.
But what Star Trek Bridge Crew, at least from what I've read, does, is it has cross-player capability so that anyone who owns a Vive, an Oculus, or a Play... This is the more important part, because it actually has the largest install base of the three.
Wow.
Or at least did the best sales this year, if I remember what I read.
Right.
The PSVR also has cross-play with it. It's a seated VR game with motion controllers where you sit on the bridge of a good old-fashioned Star Trek ship, and one person sits in the captain's chair, and one person sits
at
the comm.
Why aren't there any railroads?
Star Trek.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And one person sits at the helm, and the captain yells at the crewman, and the helmsman guides the ship, and Scotty beams the people up, you know, and, like, you all talk to each other like you're on Star Trek.
And tactical goes pew, 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 and they shoot things.
Yeah. And the game has a big $60 price tag.
So, I watched the trailer.
Yeah.
For this move, for this...
Game?
Game.
Yeah, game. If it's VR, it feels like a movie.
Yeah. And it was like everybody was
acting.
It's
a movie you play.
Everybody was acting and nomenclaturing as if they were on the bridge of an actual Federation starship.
That's not how I do.
The trailer I wanted to see, was a bunch of, like, people who don't deserve VR headsets acting like fucking clowns.
Yeah, you want the internet playing.
Yeah,
Bridge
I want
Commander.
The internet playing. So, like, you'd be like, yo, contact. Yeah. Fire, shit! Shit fired.
Did you see the
don't worry, got him!
Did you see the pack, or no, it was E3 announcement last year for this game?
No.
They got a bunch of Star Trek actors to play it.
Oh, that's rad.
Which is with one of the devs, which, like, for the most part, it was kind of okay, except that fucking LeVar Burton was the engineer.
Oh,
and he's
man.
He's just talking in Geordi talk, and it's like, I will pre-order the fuck out of the game if LeVar Burton plays it with me, because that's amazing. He was like, Captain, we have 30%.
Right, right. Like, LeVar Burton just snaps into Geordi and doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, like, he's like,
Yeah, I want to play with Michael Dorn.
Like, what, so we can get slapped around the bridge? And, like, struggle to open doors.
Indeed.
That would be the most immersive part of Bridge Commander. Worf's like,
Grr! No, I want to play with Chris Judge. from Stargate.
With Teal'c.
And I don't want him to act like Teal'c ever. I want him to act like himself. I just want to play... If you're out there...
Christopher Judge, if you are Corey and or Trevor...
I believe that you are the superior actor on SG-1.
He's good.
Like when your chops come out on those episodes where you get like diseases and stuff, it's good stuff.
It's good stuff. Matt's been running through SG-1 again.
I've been running through it.
It's real good.
Anyway.
It's a good show.
Do we have any more to say about Bridge Commander?
I don't know, that's about it. I'm hyped for that game.
It seems really cool.
You'll probably hear next episode that I either love it or hate it.
Okay.
Because I'm probably going to buy that game soon.
Yeah.
Alright.
Yeah, well, buy that $60 game, yeah. Owen.
But see, the difference is, like, I'm gonna fucking play it, Keenan. Tell you what. If I don't play Bridge, like, if I buy Bridge Crew, and I play it less than you've played Ghost Recon Wildlands by our next recording,
that's like, seriously not like it. I have nothing to gain here.
Yeah, you can bust open my chops all you want.
Okay. Okay.
But if I buy the game and play it less than you play...
If you end up hating it, and by some outside chance... Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I hate it and played it enough to not be able to refund it...
Yeah. It's good.
All right.
We got anything else on the agenda?
Does anyone have anything they want to talk about in video games?
Oh, I forgot the pain.
Well, no, that's the last thing.
Okay. All right.
I found out a thing. So, a while ago, we talked about... Steam was changing its green light to a different thing that I forget the name of. I found out the price point for
that. Yeah, me too.
It's $100, and I'm totally okay with that.
So you only have to pay $100, that's the entry point.
So it's literally just for shovelware.
Right, it's just there to keep you from porting over your phone game for fucking nothing.
Yeah.
So anyway, and or garbage.
I'm very happy about that. Yeah. I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Hopefully that helps with the store oversaturation.
Which brings us to our newest segment. Even newer than shaming Keenan at the beginning of each episode.
I mean, honestly, that was just an unofficial segment before.
Okay, but...
what's it?
But it's still the newest segment, regardless. Anyway, we're going to talk about The Pain. The Pain is where we bring up
the
theoretical...
The Pain is that boss who shoots bees at you.
Yeah, I was about to say, was he the one that went to space?
No, that's The Fury.
That's The Fury.
The Pain shoots bees at you.
Okay, bees. So, Matt, tell us about your bees.
Okay, my bees... My bees, basically... I want to talk about a thing, an imaginary thing that will never happen, that gives me great pain to think about.
Because
it won't happen, because it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful, but it can't be real.
And the thing that's beautiful that will never be real is a XCOM and Stargate hybrid game.
To which I say, make that game and send it to us. Because we'll play the shit
like
out of it.
The Stargate Command is like literally a set of underground bunkers.
Yeah.
Like very much in
it opens itself up to an ant farm.
All you need to do is put General Hammond in a sweater, man.
Ah, shit. This is where General Hammond exists. I've been watching Twin Peaks with my girlfriend.
Is General Hammond in Twin Peaks?
Yeah, dude. He plays an Air Force general.
Of course he does.
I don't know if he's a general.
So what you're telling me is General Hammond is in Twin Peaks.
His name's not Hammond. Like, they established his name is a different name.
Unacceptable.
I can't remember what it is, but like...
But his name actually is Hammond.
It's not. His name's Donis Davis, and he died, like, a few years ago.
Well, way to bring down the dope, man.
Yeah, hey.
Welcome to The Pain.
Hey, shout out to Donis Davis' ghost.
Donis Davis' bro. Like,
yeah, he's a bro.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so where can they find Don S. Davis's ghost?
if you wanna email us,
probably
about,
in his house.
No, if you wanna email Don S. Davis's ghost, that's what I asked you, Owen.
If you wanna email us the name of Don S. Davis's character on shut the
representative.
Wow, having a hard time.
I'm sorry, Owen.
So we're on r/badplaystyle. You can email
on Reddit. And if you wanna tell us about the name of Don S. Davis's character on Twin Peaks.
If you want to tell us the name of Donna
Summer's character. You can reach us at badplaystyle@gmail.com. Wow. I think we're all like getting heat stroke.
Nah, it's good.
No, we're getting heat exhaustion.
Hey, Matt. God damn it, this joke again. This fact that is now a joke.
You're laughing at it the third time.
Yep. Matt, what are we playing?
Oh, right.
Yeah, next week. What game are we playing?
For the third time, we're playing Brigador.
I'm so glad you told me because I didn't know before.
You know what's fucked up? We've said that 3 days in a row, and I still haven't played it at all.
Yeah. Well.
Bye, everybody!
Later!
talk about fish already.
Our theme music is made by my good friend Benjamin Busey. You can find his SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/basicbenji206.